We'd like to acknowledge my colleagues on this, and it's a variety of different projects over the last several years. Chris Horton from Crop Science Department has led most of the weed management research. Alan Meyer from Soil Science has been the soil management lead. Julie Grossman, a new faculty member, is going to be dealing with a lot of the organic soil fertility management, legume cover crop production issues. Molly Hamilton is a research associate. She's been our main contact for developing the grain crop marketing information and organizing a website. Larry Elworth has been a very interesting participant. He's been very active in developing ag cost share policy and information resources. And Ronnie Heiniger and Randy Weiss from Crop Science Department have been the kind of the lead for corn and wheat management issues, respectively. And we have had been fortunate to have had funding from a variety of sources, and I'll mention a few of these later. But, let's see. Okay, and I've put this under an emerging issue in North Carolina. It's not a new issue, but if we think about the national map, and this is the national acreage that USDA has published, there's not very many dots there for North Carolina. Each one of those dots is about 250 acres. So it's not new, but we do consider it an emerging issue for North Carolina because it hadn't had very much adoption to date. Oops. Okay, well, what is driving the interest really is just some of the economic potential. And for each of these corn, soybean, and wheat, we've got our 2009 grain crop budgets, and we can compare a conventional and organic system, total cost, some yield estimate, and these are our prices. And what I did is I looked at our actual budget price. In some cases, it was very different from Chicago Board of Trade, so I took the average of the two. And this is kind of the net returns to land risk and management. Okay, if we look at corn, certainly there's some potential for profit there with the organic system. Perhaps it's, you know, definitely not easy money. You know, maybe a little less than an organic system. And that goes back to much lower total input costs, primarily the fertilizer, even with quite a bit of yield reduction. We do have that price premium. Okay, for soybean, we've got higher production costs, and that's primarily there's no fertilizer input, but it's more the tillage input. Again, we get a yield reduction, price premium, and a little lower net, but a chance for some profit there. Wheat's a little more challenging in our organic system, and we're primarily soft red winter wheat. And I've been told there is a price premium market, but I couldn't come up with a number because it wasn't on our state budget and it wasn't on Chicago Board of Trade. So that's one we're working on. And some of what goes into that marketing and probably the price premium would be the development of perhaps bred wheat rather than soft winter wheat varieties. But the only way we could get that one profitable would be selling straw on that. So, well, there is interest in that. What's the rest of the country saying about these budgets? This is what CAST published 2009, the Iowa soybean budget. Again, we've got non-organic and organic, slightly higher total cost per acre, 40% yield reduction for the organic. And so we do have a higher break-even price. Are we likely to get that price? This is what we've got, current market prices. So based on those, the CAST report concluded that either one of these systems would be profitable. And again, we're assuming we've got that price premium to drive it. Another recent study out of Wisconsin looking at organic grains, several years worth of data comparing a grain rotation. Corn, soybean, wheat, red clover had approximately double the returns of no-till corn, soybean. And again, that's as long as we got price premiums, government program support. So what we see repeatedly in these budgets is this price premium issue. Kind of brings up two questions. One, you know, how confident are we in that price premium? And I'll deal with that in the next slide. The other is how stable are the yields? We're accounting for a yield reduction. I'm not really going to comment much on that, and we don't have that much state-specific data. But the actual price premium looks like it's a fairly dependable trend. If we look at all the market indicators, organic meat, we'd get a similar type curve for organic egg production. Organic milk production's going up. Some of that could certainly be supported by pasture-based or free-range systems, but there is a big demand for feed grains. North Carolina, prior to 5 years ago, almost all the feed grains were brought in from out of state. And this is the yearly USDA records of the grain price premium. Zero there would be the same price as conventional. So we can almost always count on a 50% or more price premium for a variety of organic grains, and frequently we're at 100% or more price premium. So that seems like it's a pretty dependable market incentive there. Well, our development of our extension program, it certainly depends on a few key issues. One is having interested producers, and we're starting to have that. Two, having supports for funding agencies, and I'll give you a couple examples of those. We've seen that. And three is being able to have a kind of a combination. We do have a few dedicated faculty positions. Mine is not one of those, so I put myself in this category. There's quite a bit of overlap on the with conventional grain production systems. So we are able to justify faculty time dealing with the issues. Historically, some of the significant events and institutionally have been the Carolina Farm Stewardship Association is a nonprofit organization, and that generated a lot of our initial contacts. The Center for Environmental Farming Systems, it's a research farm, not just NC State, but some other organizations, has given us a dedicated field laboratory. And then now, the university actually has dedicated specific faculty positions, horticulture, crop, and soil science department, so we have faculty with assigned to address these issues. Okay. And again, historically, this the Carolina Farm Stewardship Association, that was founded in 79. It was farmers, gardeners, and consumers wanted to support each other and foster the growth of organic food in the Carolinas. So their mission was really to promote local and organic agriculture. And since 79, they've been able to keep continual stream of grant funding and support sustainable ag development projects. They have an annual Sustainable Ag Conference, and that's their own conference. They do coordinate with and invite, you know, university participation. Okay. They sponsor farm tours and workshops. Let me go back on that. And again, any of that information you get from this website. Now, we'll say that their primary focus has been with smallholders, probably dealt more with mixed vegetable fruit, pasture systems. They do have some small acreage grain farmers in there. Okay. Institutionally, the next thing to mention is the Center for Environmental Farming Systems. Again, that's a state and university lab. It's actually a cooperative effort, North Carolina State University, North Carolina A&T State University, which is also the other land-grant institution, and our Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. So this is created in the coastal plain near Goldsboro in 94. And again, it's got the three parts of the land-grant mission, research, extension, and education, designed as a model partnership, kind of to be a little more innovative and interdisciplinary than what we do on, although we don't discourage that on other research stations, this is built into the whole concept of that farm. And there are six distinct units. So while one of those is organic research and part of that is grains, there's no real section dedicated to organic grains. But again, it has generated interest, and it's developed some of our initial farmer contacts, again, for current organic grain projects. So recently, some of the things we have specifically related to organic grains, we got to C. Smith Reynolds Foundation funded a project to enhance an extension project, enhance organic grain and fiber production in North Carolina. Golden Leaf Foundation, which is our tobacco settlement funds, the way that's managed in North Carolina, financed, an extension project, developing an organic grain industry in North Carolina. And then we've had a variety of more topical research-funded projects of USDA SARE, USDA CIG, National Wildlife and Fish Foundation to support cover crop work, and then a variety of other things. So we have been able to get funding targeted to the organic grain projects. Well, if we go back to the way we're kind of developing an organic grain extension project, I think the key to a lot of it is having a farmer and industry advisory panel, and that's helped us really set the agenda and priorities. There's so many possible things we could be looking at and the directions that could be pulled. One thing that's come out of that pretty interesting is that we have designated some specific target farms, and they're different sizes and different regions of the state. And we've used those as a group to do a little bit more detailed problem consultation than we would have developed had we worked their own county ag extension agent working with one of us at a time. And as we've worked with those farmers and spent that extra time with them, we often found, again, many of them were then willing to be the focal points for on-farm demonstrations. Okay. And throughout this, we try and use that process to make sure we're coordinating replicated plot research with what we do in these demonstrations. So we can get some publisher research results and get some information of interest when we have the demos. Throughout the extension program, we're trying to enhance market and cost share opportunities. We try and dedicate time at all these events just for networking. And since we're directed by this advisory panel, we usually have folks there at each event. And then again, Molly Hamilton has coordinated much of this, disseminating the information all through the website. And if you do a search for organic grains on the web, you'll probably be able to find this website. It's Organic Field Crop Production and Marketing. It's got news and events, and it's got links to quite a few different aspects. Technical production information, marketing info, the certification transition process, and then a couple profiles from our target farms. Okay, just as an example, technical production information, we did as one of our earlier projects come up with a production guide, and it's we printed a few, but mostly folks are working print on demand now from the website, and it'll cover soil fertility, cover crops, rotations, organic corn hybrid selection, budgets, amendment suppliers, and cost share program information. The marketing information link would cover kind of an overview. It's been interesting. We have a buyer list, and anybody can contact us and get their information put down there. There's a lot of competition for this grain. We've got several in North Carolina, adjacent states, Eastern Seaboard, and again, the rest of the U.S. So it'll list what types of grain and anything else, you know, kind of relevant information that they would have on there. There's tips on harvesting, storing, price links through either Rodale or USDA and other web resources. We've got links to certification and transition. I think that something that folks find useful is we have our own university guide and some sample record-keeping forms, okay, just to help, I guess, ease some of the fears on what they're actually going to have to do to come be in compliance with all this. Links to accredited certifiers, and some sort of miscellaneous information. I mentioned we had the targeted farms, and we do have some farm profile information. And we've got more than two targeted farms. We're kind of one that said, okay, we'll put up there anything there you're willing to share. Okay, and we've had two, and it sort of demonstrates the range of farms we're working with. One of them's 150 acres, grain, all certified organic, more than 10 years, perhaps what we might consider a more traditional organic farmer. And another one that's 2,000 acres, had always farmed conventionally, become more interested in the marketing opportunities the last few years, and has transitioned about 200 acres recently. And again, each will provide some of their agronomic information. They're in different regions of the state. And both of them have served, we've worked them through the target farm consulting. They've been the sites of field demos. There's a lot more information that they will share with people at a field visit or demo than they will put on a website. And that's part of the learning process for the other farmers, is even though we don't have it on the website, they can actually, if we do visit one of those at a field day, they'll actually talk to them a lot more about production problems, they'll talk to them about their pricing and market schemes, stuff that they wouldn't want to share on a website. Programmatically, what have the outcomes been? You know, we do some kind of traditional metrics. We typically about 3 field days a year, and we'll get 10 to 50 participants. A lot of times these are at the target farms, sometimes they're at a research station. About 3 bigger workshops or conferences a year. There can be some overlap. We'll have a combination, you know, indoor program and field visit, about 3 a year, probably a little bit higher attendance. So we've got some metrics like that. Summer 2008, we had 40 participants go on a 3-day bus tour. We went to the Rodale Institute, and we visited a variety of commercial organic grain farms in Maryland and Virginia. This was part of what our Golden Leaf Foundation funded. Okay, spent time producer fields, again, talking about real production problems and looking at some, you know, managed fields. We got an overview of the Rodale plots and, again, some of the philosophy the Rodale Institute has concerning sustainable ag, organic farming. Wherever we stopped, there was a lot of interest in, you know, specific tools, field operations. So, again, some of the technical outcomes, you know. Chris Horton has led the weed management group. And I'm just putting one slide in. They've got a lot more information. He's run grad students through there, looking at rotary hoeing. And, you know, 1, 2, or 3 rotary hoe passes, they can really reduce weed counts, okay? We've got similar, you know, information base we'll present related to soil fertility. A lot of this isn't new research, but we may reorganize something. We've got a big animal industry, so we'll look at different kinds of manures. And, you know, if we put out 100 pounds of nitrogen as these manures, this is what we get for phosphorus, micronutrients. You know, having a poultry industry, we've also got feather meal. So, again, we can get that nitrogen without the phosphorus or the micronutrients. We get anecdotal comments. We got an organic farm. You don't have to put out lime. Okay? Well, we've got one organic farmer. He's using mushroom compost. Every time he puts out 100 pounds of nitrogen, he's putting out a ton of lime in the compost. So, again, just using some of the information available to us to kind of deal with some of the technical issues. We put out nitrogen response curves to inorganic nitrogen, you know, the same amount of nitrogen as either manure or a combination of manure, cover crop, manure, feather meal. You know, we can get about the same crop yield here. Again, that's 30% all layer manure, half rate of layer manure with either hairy vetch or feather meal. You know, so we're generating technical information like this. We're revisiting. This is some legume cover crop work that was during the energy crisis in the 80s. Larry King, strip till and crimson clover. We've got some interest in aerial overseeding into standing green soybean. This is hairy vetch coming up after soybean harvest. Okay. Here this is herbicide. That's probably similar cost to maybe the extra tillage to kill it down. Most of the cost of these is the seed. We can come up with a total. Typical seed costs for us, and if we think about legume nitrogen, if we've got this much productivity, that's a Y equal 1 over X function. This is how much dollars per pound of nitrogen. For a conventional farmer, they're looking at, you know, 25 to 50 cents a pound. We'd need 125 to 200 pounds legume nitrogen per acre. Feather meal is costing a little over $3 a pound. We can get 25 to 50 pounds of legume nitrogen per acre. We match that price. Numerous tests, and this is, you know, how likely are we to get 25 to 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre? We can do that quite a few tests, a lot more often than we can get up here. And Julie Grossman is going to be updating this slide because we'll have a lot more. You know, if we do aggressive management, early planting, late kill, we can get a lot more 150. Plus pounds nitrogen per acre yield. Again, these are examples of technical outcomes. Well, you know, how about the impact in terms of grain crop acreage? These are, except for that last date, these are the USDA acreage estimates, soybean, wheat, and corn. This miscellaneous, that last date, we don't have it broken down. And this last date is our program estimates based on farmer contacts and what we know is in transition. So this is not multiplied by anything. Okay, that's 3,000 acres or about 1,200 hectares. But prior, by 2004, we were, you know, less than 500 acres in the state. So it does look like, you know, it is growing pretty rapidly. A couple myths I think we're going to overcome, I'll just mention. One, we hear this at meetings still today, that yield reductions due to organic grain production will lead to world starvation. Okay, something that we've also heard at some of the organic conferences in the past is that there's no role for reductionist research in organic agriculture, that we can't really play a role unless we take a holistic organic approach to deal with things. And just to deal with this first one, this slide demonstrates corn, soybean, and cotton acreage in North Carolina from 93 to the present, planted acreage. The CV on the total of those is about 3%. Okay, so if we think about what that means for corn, 850,000 or 95% confidence interval is plus or minus 60,000 acres a year. Remember the organic crop acreage total, we were 3,000 acres is what we're up to. All right. If we look at the U.S., total certified organic cropland acreage, 2005, 1.7 million acres, 0.5% of national cropland acreage. So really, the organic grains, what they represent, it's a high-value niche crop. It's not a replacement for, you know, traditional grain as a food. The second myth there is, the question, is there a role for reductionist research in organic agriculture? And I think what some of our work has shown is that these single-factor experiments really don't necessarily can be done, and not necessarily even on certified organic farmland. Okay, and we've got results that are of interest to the organic farmers. You know, this weed response to tillage, has been a tremendous interest, and I think is going to be valid for their fields. The cover crop management productivity work, in terms of productivity levels, will be valid, and I think Julie will take it once we get to more complex topics like what soil microorganisms are involved, that might be something different. But, you know, nutrient availability from manures, okay? Again, that could be done on any kind of farmland. And there actually are some advantages to not doing it on certified organic land. We got lower value land, there's less cooperative risk, and there's greater experimental management flexibility if we want to set up alleys or move equipment from one farm to the next, use any kind of seed source, we can do that. The future of this, what I see is ongoing issues for our program and coming for our groups, marketing, which is something that I don't do, but it's a primary interest. And, you know, are there any new crops? Can we add value, get that price premium up? This should be food grain. And we've got a group that's really looking at bread wheat development because that would greatly impact the economics of production economics of that. The transition cost, how farmers move to that, and any cost share options they could get help with. And then weed management and soil quality. And these two, it's kind of interesting. They may actually deal with some of the same management issues. Conservation tillage, cover crops, and lengthening the rotation are all angles we're using to try and tackle those. So I'll end with this slide and try and answer any questions you might have. So. Yes.
Yeah. Two questions, sir. First one, you have three FTEs plus you dedicate a portion of your time to this emerging issue.
Mm-hmm.
In times of declining budgets, 3,000 acres versus the rest of North Carolina, how do you justify that effort?
Well, for example, the manure nutrient availability. You know, the last couple of years we've had tremendous interest by conventional farms in, you know, exactly how many, you know, how good are our estimates of manure nutrient availability. We had a little interest to fund some cover crop work. And, you know, with high nitrogen prices now, I think what we're finding is because of the seed cost on cover crops, it's still quite a bit more expensive than inorganic nitrogen. But we try and piggyback funding and look for overlapping issues. But much of the farm acreage that has transitioned recently into organic has been conventional grain farmers. So they're on their on those same commodity boards. They are looking at these as relevant issues. But we, you know, it is a balance. That's right. We can't.
And that's the follow-up question I have is you say, well, I'm piggybacking on, and cover crops, great. I mean, we can do that in conventional research. But some of the conventional organic growers that I have worked with or had questions about is that, well, we can go to the back of the literature. No, that's the wrong literature. You know, do you get buy-in from your controlled experiments, even if it's not done on certified organic ground? Say, well, the principles are the same. I mean, we can do all the research, but if they're not buying in, you know.
Well, I think that's where I think we've got to say differentiate between two types of issues. One is this simple single factor thing, where I can look at a very simple response. But I think we do have to recognize that there probably are some complex biotic interactions we're not testing. If we want to think about, again, Julie Grossman, we'd be looking at probably the inoculum population, things like that. There's going to be some complex things we don't deal with. And then what I will do in terms of program development, I started some of this work before Julie came on board, and so that's going to that's going to be a lead faculty to take over that. Now, I will still be available in terms of dealing with certain issues, but it is a time balance. Now, this year at our annual grain conference, the organic grains group is going to meet about half a day at the end of our conventional grain conference. And, you know, that's something they just negotiated out that they could fit it in at the same convention center space. So they're not... The grain group is not really an antagonistic relationship. Yes?
Can we hold on?
Okay.
I think our speaker...